This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Well, welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho, and here is where we talk with knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people on the program to try to help them. Today, we're going to talk about the middle schoolers, or the sometimes they're called tweens or preteens, any number of terms. And the guest is Cynthia Tobias. Hi, Cynthia. Well, glad to have you here.
Hi, Lon. It's great to be here.
You know, Cynthia's had a lot of experience. She's the CEO of Applied Learning Styles. She lives over in the Seattle area, author of 11 books, including Middle School, The Inside Story, which is the title of what we're going to be talking about today. And the subtitle of that is What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. And so we're going to get some of the inside story here. Now, Cynthia's had a lot of background, 8 years of teaching high school, 27 years of private practice, 6 years in law enforcement, an author, guest on radio and television programs, and here's another one for you. Well, Cynthia, let's start. What is middle school or middle school supposed to be? What do you mean when you say the middle schoolers?
Middle school, and now that puberty's kind of starting younger than ever, it really is kind of formally defined between the ages of 10 and 14.
So it's sort of like preteens, sort of covers the preteens to a large extent.
Yeah, definitely. Puberty, right, pre-adolescence, and sometimes starts as early as third or fourth grade, and typically always before it kind of started in that fifth, sixth grade area, but sometimes it's starting a lot earlier.
Yeah, there's been a constant change, both sexes, the girls especially. I've noticed the change getting younger and younger as they start physically mature. Well, why are those years or these particular years so challenging? My dad was a junior high principal, and he used the term neither fish nor fowl, and I taught ninth grader, and I think it was a seventh grade math class I did my student teaching in, and so I've had some experience in that. But why are they so challenging?
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons is there's a huge transition between elementary and middle school. Because in elementary, you know, your parents kind of took care of everything and you know, were real hands-on management, and you kind of knew who you were. And in middle school, suddenly everything's shifted. You're expected to be a little more on your own. You're expected to start thinking independently, figuring things out. And I think most kids, they don't know how to do that. Plus, at the same time, their body is growing in weird ways and quickly, and they don't even recognize themselves half the time. The kids that we spent the last couple of years with, they don't actually know what their identity is. You know, if you take a high schooler or an adult and you say, "Oh, I saw a sweater in the store; it reminded me so much of you," but you can't do that with middle schoolers because there's nothing that you don't know who they are yet, and so they're sort of trying to figure out, whoa, what's going on? Why am I tripping over things and running into door jams? Why am I clumsy now? What's going on with my body? Why don't I understand how to be a cool kid? What am I supposed to do with all these teachers, you know, there's just so much going on with them that it's highly challenging.
And that's a time, and maybe it's because of it, but that's a time when there are even more self-consciousness. There's a lot of more self-consciousness at that age, and that creates a problem. Another thing is in the academic part of it, that's about the time, fourth grade, I understand, fourth, fifth grade is about the time they go from some learning facts, concrete lessons, to more abstract. And so that's a big shift.
Right. You know, the old thing about up till the fourth grade, you're learning to read, and then after the fourth grade, you're reading to learn. So, and there really is that big shift. And again, you're supposed to be kind of thinking on your own. And when it comes to academics, what we found, of course, with middle schoolers is school is kind of a stage where everything else happens because so much is happening socially. And like you said, you're probably never at your lower self-esteem than you are in about the sixth or seventh grade. So you're trying to cope with all that. And then all of a sudden you go from one teacher every day in elementary school to maybe four or five teachers every day, and just so much is hitting them from so many different areas.
Yeah, well, that's quite a stage in there. One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning, we also have a chat function. If you're listening to this live on K4HD.com, we have a chat function, and you can ask questions or make comments, and we'll get to them and try to answer them as much as we can on that. So, don't forget to use the chat function. We'd love to have your participation. Well, you mentioned something in here that really intrigued me. What are the unwritten rules that middle schoolers try to follow? What are those unwritten rules?
Well, again, you know, this is a whole new arena for them when they go into the middle school setting. And so they don't know. Everybody knows that there are sort of unwritten rules, what's okay to say and what's not okay to say, who the cool kids are, where should you sit in the lunchroom, are there certain tables or kids that you should definitely avoid. No one actually tells you that stuff, but you know innately that that's going on. And so you're really kind of finding your way without any kind of GPS, without any map, without anybody saying, hey, here's one thing you don't want to talk about, and here's one person you don't want to walk up to and talk to. And the kids tell us, when you know, we talked to a couple hundred kids in the course of writing the book, and they told us that that's more agonizing than any other kind of thing sometimes, is just, oh, what's going to keep me from looking stupid? I mean, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to say that, or I wasn't supposed to sit there, or we weren't supposed to go in there and look like this. And there are so many things they're trying to keep track of.
Well, that sounds a little bit familiar. I think even as adults, we go into new situations. We don't know where we're supposed to sit and, you know, all those questions. So we have some experience at it is the main difference. Otherwise, it sounds like it's about the same thing that adults have to deal with.
Right. Although, I don't know about you, but I still kind of vividly remember my seventh grade year being probably just about the worst year of my life for kind of that reason on top of, you know, when you put that uncertainty and unfamiliarity on top of everything else that's going on with you as you're growing from childhood into adolescence and then into adulthood, it kind of gets a little overwhelming.
Yeah, well, and they don't have the experience and it's all new to them, and that's a big difference. And so, well, I feel sympathy for them. I know I've had the thought, and I've had several adults tell me I'd never want to be a kid again, and I think you're usually thinking of those years, the middle school years, the junior high, middle school, preteens, because that's the one where that's all. Well, they say there's a book called Mean Girls, or a movie called Mean Girls. That was more high school, but wouldn't that also really apply? Isn't that when girls especially start to get into Odd Girl Out and all the Mean Girls type of stuff in that age?
It does, and there's a lot of, you know, subtle criticism and subtle looks and things that guys don't recognize, but the girls can really be cruel. And now that social media is so big, of course, that just magnifies it because it's not just in person. They can just absolutely crucify you online. It's easy to destroy a girl's self-esteem. And another girl can do it quicker than almost anybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's been a lot of stuff on that and that in the media about that. Hopefully someday we'll figure it all out to where it gets under control, that kind of bullying, online bullying. And that's a topic we could talk about all hour. Now, we have a couple questions from the chat function. And do you find the kids find out who they are in the middle school age?
I think they start to. We talk about it in the book about the bubble, sort of where there it's all about them. Parents will say, you know, am I raising a narcissist? All she thinks about is herself, or all he does is look in the mirror all day. And I think one of the first things they find out about them is them physically, because of all the physical changes that are going on. And then they're trying to figure out how to relate to their parents, how to relate to their friends. You know, this is a point where parents especially start recognizing a lot of non-communication. They sort of clam up when it comes to their parents, and they start focusing more on peers. But the other important thing that we tell parents to remember is that because they are trying to figure out who they are, they really begin taking notice of the adults in their lives, their parents especially, on how do I become a grown-up? How do I act as a grown-up? How do I make decisions? What does a grown-up look like and work like? And so that they begin to really kind of key off of us without us even realizing it sometimes. And so parents will say, well, you don't speak to me respectfully enough. And maybe it's because you're still talking to your middle schooler like they were a little kid, or you're talking out of frustration. And they really are kind of taking mental notes, trying to figure out, how do I grow up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's a time when role models are very important, and the parents especially, but things in the media, sports heroes, what have you. So role models, I presume, is becoming very important to these kids as they're trying to figure out, who am I and who am I like?
Right, and you know what? Speaking of role models, you and I both know that there aren't very many good ones on television, and they really are, if you watch the programs they're watching, they are acting a lot like some of those sitcoms that they're watching on television. It's a good thing to keep an eye on, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I noticed I raised four kids, and I noticed one thing. What I noticed at the time was the kids were giving us problems, and it came down to because our lives didn't look like the lives on some of those sitcoms.
Right.
Things weren't neat. Were tied up in a half hour and an hour, all neat and tidy. Things were messy. Always was in our household, everybody's household, I think.
That's right.
Well, do you think there should be punishment for online bullying? That's something we're talking about, and this is one of the questions we have in here. And there's two questions. And is there really anything wrong with looking at yourself in the mirror? I don't think you were saying that, but you talked about that. So could you tackle those two questions, punishment for online bullying, or how would you handle it? And is there anything wrong with looking at yourself in the mirror?
Sure. Well, I'll take the mirror one first, and that is, no, there's nothing wrong with looking at yourself in the mirror. Well, one of the things we just caution parents is it may be happening more often when their kids are going through this stage, and it's because they are figuring things out. And so it just brings a little understanding. It's not like you never look away from the mirror, but you know, you give your kids a little bit more leeway, a little more grace to try to figure out what's going on physically. And that's when you can also kind of talk about it if you can. We talk about talking about it in a little bite-sized pieces. And, you know, as far as the bullying goes, bullying is a very broad topic, as you probably know, Lon. It's just, you know, what qualifies as bullying, and certainly online bullying. One of the best things to do is try to step in with prevention, which means for your middle schooler, you know, you have to think long and hard whether you actually let them get smartphones, and if you're going to give them a Facebook account, an Instagram account, you're going to let them be on there, then you've got to make some terms available. We think it's important that you have either access to passwords or that you're there, also their friend on Instagram or Facebook, so that you can monitor things. You don't want to have too much secrecy and privacy at the middle school age level, because then that helps your children become more of a target, not only for online bullies, but online child predators, etc. So, you know, for your 11, 12, 13-year-old, you're not concerned as much with their privacy as you are with, you know, building some trust and building some knowledge on how to work and deal with things online. so that when they get a little older and they do have more privacy, that they're more acquainted with how to work it and be more protected.
You know, there's a question here again on that that we hadn't really talked about, but why do we put so much pressure on kids, and especially these kids this age, the middle school kids we're talking about? Is there all that kind of pressure, or is it just come naturally, or do we increase the pressure unnecessarily as adults?
Well, it depends on what kind of pressure you're talking about. You know, if you talk about academic pressure, like you're going to put a lot of pressure on middle school kids to get really high grades. That can be problematic, not because you don't want them to work hard with grades. Grades are still important, but remember that the permanent record doesn't start till ninth grade. So middle school years are an excellent time to have a little bit of grace period and safety net to help them experiment with what works. If we're ever going to experiment with, you know, what kind of situations work with homework, how does it work to stay organized, this would be the time that you do it. You don't just say you don't have to do it, but you say let's figure out what works. And if this doesn't work, and you get a lower grade, we've still got time to make that up and next time get a better one, and not have it really count. So the academic pressure, if you're going to put a lot of pressure on about getting high grades, that's going to cause a lot more stress in other areas. And so you just need to kind of balance that out. If you talk about pressure as far as social pressure and peer pressure, where they certainly put enough of that on themselves. And again, as parents, we can ease a lot of that by, number one, you know, getting to know their friends, not in an embarrassing way, but, you know, you want to keep everybody on the radar. You don't want to have a time when you don't know who their friends are, who they're hanging around with, who they're spending time with. But you also have to, you know, it's this time when they're trying to figure out how to deal with their peers, which peers are the most important to them, who they want to be like, and you want to try to keep the communication lines open as much as you can without bugging them.
You know, that communication, and all my guests and all the articles, everything comes down to communication. Without communication, you don't have relationships, and nothing seems to work. So communication is really important. A couple of interesting questions here. Do you think parents mess things up at this age, and do you think parents should just let kids be kids and not rush them to grow up? So we want to talk about those two that are sort of related.
Well, an interesting thing, and one of the reasons that we wrote the book in the first place, there was a junior high principal who's also a friend of mine, and he said, I wish I could tell parents how important it is during those middle school, junior high years to really hang on and strengthen the relationship with their child, because the tendency sometimes is to just, you know, let go and just say, ah, they're bugging me anyway, just when they grow up, they can, you know, they'll be easier to talk to. And this is a time of real wet cement. And this is a time when, even though they're kind of squirrely and immature and hard to be with sometimes, that
and moody.
If you, and moody and very emotional. But if you let go too far, I mean, you want to relax your grip, but you can't let go of the wheel. If you move off the mark too much and you don't stay working on that relationship, then by the time they get to high school, they really don't have the depth of relationship that they need with you at that point. And you can get some back, but there are things that are just irreplaceable at this time in their life. And it won't be easy sometimes to hang in there, but there are ways that you can stay close to your middle schooler. And it's sure important to do that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? Parents just let kids be kids and not rush them to grow up. I'm not sure if they're talking about helicopter parents or total McGlynny kids do whatever you want to do, which is not necessarily a good thing either. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, one thing to remember is that when your child turns 18, they aren't going to suddenly wake up that morning and be independent and know how to live on their own and make their own decisions and take responsibility. This is a building process. And so really what you want to do is, in incremental parts, you want to keep grooming them for growing up. So although you don't want to be a helicopter parent or let them do anything they want, you do want to stay involved and you want to stay a little bit hands-on for teaching them. The price tags for making mistakes are a little smaller at this age than they are when they're adults, that's for sure. So there are some decisions that you can let them make, that you can guide them in making, and you can let them You don't always rescue them if something fails. But the whole idea is that you stay in touch and you're trying to help them figure out how things work. So you don't just let go and let them be whatever they want to do, but you, in using empathy and using some responsibility, saying, wow, that sounds like a bad day. That's quite a problem that you're facing. Do you have any ideas on how you're going to handle it? Instead of just jumping in to say, well, you know what you should do, and here's what you're going to do, and here, you know, helping them figure things out, helping them think about things, and little by little, teaching them to be an adult. They need that on a gradual basis. Otherwise, they're going to be a mess when they're 18.
Yeah, and as you say, that sounds like good advice. The preteen years are probably the last best time to develop a really solid relationship that you can use or build on as they continue through adolescence. Now, the next question, I'm going to defer it a little bit. Is there a book to follow this information? And I think that's exactly what we're talking about, the books you've written, particularly middle school, The Inside Story. So I'm going to defer till the end of it. I'll give you a few minutes to explain your book, how people can get a hold of it. So the answer to the question is yes, there are lots of books, and Cynthia just happens to have a pretty good one. Now, okay, so we'll get back to that later on. Not all kids are the same, so how do we figure them out? That sounds like a parent about ready to tear their hair out.
Well, that's true. Not all kids are the same. Not all adults are the same. And the interesting thing, of course, is a lot of times as parents, we've married somebody opposite from us even. So we're all getting on each other's nerves if we try to make everybody do things our way. And, of course, some of my other books, the Learning Styles book, The Way They Learn and Every Child Can Succeed, some of those books talk about looking at the differences. And one of the best ways to deal with the differences is to really focus on the strengths, not the stuff that irritates you, but the strengths, and figuring out why sometimes we're not trying to irritate you on purpose. It's just that we see the world in a different way. And if you can ask and answer the question, what's the point? What am I trying to accomplish here? What do I really need you to do? If I can get to that bottom line, then I never have to compromise accountability. But I can also go ahead and give you an opportunity to find another way to get there, as long as you get there. And that gets both of us off the hook a little bit for saying, look, the bottom line is I got to have that homework done and in by the time you go to school first thing in the morning. What did you have in mind? What do you want to try? What do you think is going to help you do it? Where do you want to study? How do you want the help? Once you have that bottom line established, then again, that also helps them practice a little bit of responsibility, experimentation to find out, well, I know you want me to do it that way, but I don't concentrate very well when I do it that way. I'd like to do it this way. And then you get to say, well, as long as you can prove that works, and the way you'll prove it is it'll be done, then I'm going to let you experiment a little.
Okay, we have a question here that I think applies to what you've been talking about or applying. Should we remember how things were for us and apply it to the kids these days, or should we let them do their own things?
We get some interesting reactions from the kids on this. You know, in this book, we went straight to the source, and we asked the kids about stuff like this, and they, you know, the consensus among the middle schoolers themselves is it's okay if mom and dad want to be kind of empathetic with us about when they were in junior high school, but they don't want long stories, and they don't want a whole lot of description. And the kids said, you know, it was a lot different 20 years ago than it is today. And as, of course, as parents ourselves, we know that yes, in many ways it was, but some things never change. And I usually tell parents, sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words. So if you really want to show empathy to your middle schooler, go get a picture of when you were in middle school and show it to them. And then, you know, say little, show much, and then listen to them. The three things we put in the book that seem to be the core, middle schoolers, they want to be listened to, they want to be understood, and they want to be taken seriously. So if you want to talk to them about, hey, I remember what it was like when I was a kid, and that was my worst year, and all that is okay, but briefly, you know, the empathy saying, wow, that must be, I know how you feel, I remember that was a tough time. And then kind of leave it at that, not go into a whole lot of description. unless they ask for it.
Okay, so it's just having a conversation, and that's a relationship. The question, another area we touched on a little bit earlier, but what advice do you have for managing and supervising the use of electronics, entertainment, and social media? And that's a big one, so let's just have a few minutes on that. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on advice on that.
It is. And again, if you're going to have your middle schoolers with a cell phone, for example, our biggest advice right away is that you not let them sleep with it. It should not be in their room overnight. It should be charging either in your room or have everybody's phones charging out in the kitchen or some main area. Otherwise, what they do is they will text their friends all night long. And the kids admit it. You know, you won't even know. So the one thing you don't want is the cell phone in their bedroom overnight. The other thing you don't want is their computer, their laptop. If you've got a laptop that they're working on, that needs to be worked on in open areas where the whole family is. Again, not in their bedroom with the door closed. You want to be just kind of smart about it, and you want to be open with them about saying, look, my main goal here is to make sure that you're safe. I'm not trying to spy on you or be nosy for everything you do, but I am most concerned about your safety and about you learning how to do this and be safe. So we're just going to, you know, for the next little bit, we're going to be kind of supervising it. And most kids are okay with that. If they're not, then you take away the privilege of the electronics. It's just kind of part of the term. If an 11-year-old is going to have a cell phone, there have to be some definite terms of use that go with it. And am I going to let my 12-year-old have a cell phone and be on the Internet without my knowing what's going on there? Absolutely not. So we have to come to some kind of agreement. If I'm going to let you have a Facebook account, I'm going to be a friend, and I'm going to see who your friends are, and I'm going to see your posts, and so we're going to make sure it's okay. So you really want to be, you know, parents are a little bit timid sometimes to say, oh, this is an invasion of privacy. Well, for a 12 or 13-year-old, there's not a whole big expectation of privacy. This is the time when protection is more important.
And we got to remember that privacy is maybe a gone thing anyway with the Internet and the surveillance and everything else going on. But that's right in the area. We got a couple questions here. Do you think this is a form of not trusting them? And why so extreme on conditions? Do you think that's extreme?
Well, I think it's not. In fact, it can even be couched as I'm saying, this isn't that we don't trust you. In fact, this is part of the process that builds trust. As I see that you know how to handle the social media, you know how to handle the safety, the online safety, you build trust and then you gain more trust. And by the time you're 16, of course, you're going to have a lot more privacy than you do when you're 12. I think every parent has to decide for themselves what they feel confident about, what they feel comfortable with. I think they just have to make sure that safety and protection is always in place. So how extreme it gets, you know, my co-author Sue, when her boys were growing up, she insisted that she have all their passwords, and if they ever changed them, she had them. I was a little less extreme in that I didn't ask for my boys' passwords, but on the account, anytime I asked them, they had to tell me, who are these friends, where did they, you know, where did you meet them, and then I had to be where I could see their posts also. So I just think we have to be smart about it, and we have to be careful these days, especially because so much goes on.
You know, part of it is this applies to adults, but especially to kids. You need to earn their trust,
right?
Or they need to earn the trust that you give them. And if you have a kid that's sneaky, and you'll know it, they're getting away with things, and they don't let you know what's going on, or they're secretive, or stuff like that. That kid would have. Deserves less trust than somebody that's pretty open and honest with them. They have a question here. Don't you think if there's open communication with the kids, you wouldn't need to be so strict? Well, it depends on how the kids, what they say when they're open, I would think.
Right. And you know, you can, there are ways to talk to your kids that don't make you sound like you're, you know, the police coming down on them. You know, you can say, look, my concern is safety. How will I know that you're safe? How will I know that no one is getting to you online that I wouldn't care about, and let them tell you, let them, you know, ask them, hey, you know, maybe I'm asking this the wrong way, but you know, my main goal here is that I want to make sure.
Well, we seem to have still lost the audio on that. I think I'm back on. And this is Lon Woodbury, but talking with Cynthia Tobias about middle school, the inside story. And we'll take a one-minute break. Do the public service announcement, and hopefully she'll be back on.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
Okay, I think we're back. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we've been talking to Cynthia Tobias about the middle school. Sorry about the technical difficulties there, but I think we've weathered. You there, Cynthia?
I am here.
Okay, great. Well, let's talk about what discipline should look like for a middle schooler.
What should look like?
Discipline.
Oh, discipline. Well, you know, again, some of it's individual with parents, but most of the middle schoolers we talked to said they really expect to know the boundaries. They expect their parents to tell them, especially when it comes to spiritual and moral values, what they expect. They don't want you to just let go and do anything, but they want, again, they want you to start treating them more like adults and less like little kids. So, again, the biggest advantage with your discipline will be your tone of voice, the way that you communicate your authority, keeping your voice firm but calm. One of the biggest complaints of the kids was, oh, if I do that, my parents just go off on me. They freak out and they start yelling at me. That tends to negate any real positive results from discipline anyway. So what you want to do is you want to be clear about it and you want to be calm about it. And sometimes Sue, my co-author, she has a little method called the broken record, and that is sometimes you'll say something, well, I need you to do this. I'm not going to do that. I can't believe I need you to do this. I can't believe you're asking me to do that. No, I need you to do this. You just keep saying the same thing, but you say it in a calm tone, in a calm manner, and matter of fact. You know, I'm sorry you chose to do that. You and I both know that's inappropriate, and we're going to have to take care of it. And you stay calm. The more screaming and yelling you do, the worse the effect is, and it really doesn't help in the end.
Absolutely, and I think there's another mental attitude here that is my big thing, and that discipline and punishment are not the same thing. The roots of discipline is to draw and to teach. Punishment is to inflict pain. And my thought on punishment is it's inflicting pain so that you will do what I want you to do, and that's not a learning situation at all.
Right, and discipline is more like disciple. In other words, you're trying to teach them how to be, you know, an adult and how to follow the plan into what they need, and so you're doing it for a purpose and for a reason.
And as you say, calm and consistent and persistent. Persistence is the important one, because sometimes you have to say it three or four times before they really hear you.
Right. And we talked about that in the book, one of my favorite parts about the bubble, which is that they don't really hear what you're saying to them until you get to the part that has to do with them. So as soon as they hear you, you can say, well, we need to do blah, 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 and so that's why I want you to go to school tomorrow with your dad instead of me. And they go, what? What? What'd you just say? Did you not hear what I just said? I just went through this whole thing to tell you. But they don't hear it until you say, look, here's the part that has to do with you.
Yeah.
If you start there, then they can tune in. But if all you're doing is talking, and they don't have, and it doesn't have anything to do with them yet, then they're not going to tune in.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's all kids, and I think especially this age. I know with my kids, I would tease them a little bit. I would, when we get into something like that, I'd suggest, well, you know, maybe we should get you down for a hearing aid. Maybe you need a hearing aid or something like that
right.
on that. Here's a question that a lot of people work with, but I don't read much about. How can you pass on your values or your faith to a middle schooler? Because that's a lot of people say you shouldn't be teaching religion or values in school. It's at home. But how do the parents do that?
Well, again, this was interesting because even we went to Colorado Springs and focused on the family. And we had a group of 17 middle schoolers that were a mix. Some were from church families and others were unchurched families. And we talked to them about spiritual and moral values. What do you want your parents, how do you want them to talk to you about that? And most of them said, you know, they're grappling with their own personal faith, trying to decide, do I want the same faith as my parents? Do I want to believe like my parents do? I'm having questions about that. How do I know this is real? How do I know what's true? They're really searching for that, and sometimes they're afraid to tell their parents that. They say because they're afraid their parents will be all hurt or all panicked or all freaked out. So most of them admitted that they really like to have somebody to turn to, another young adult maybe that they trust, or a youth leader or someone that they can express some of their doubts and questions without having their parents think that they've lost all faith.
Mm-hmm. And again, back to what you'd said earlier, communication. You need to talk
right.
to them about it and be open and talk with them about it. And what are some of the, and this gets into the area I work with kids that are struggling. Say they might need residential treatment, sometimes for mental health issues, sometimes just an attitude, real bad attitude that's dangerous. But what are some of the warning signs that a middle schooler might be dealing with more serious issues?
Well, you know, there's a certain amount of privacy that they like and they want to go close their door, and a certain amount of withdrawal that they go through just trying to figure things out. But you can, here again, it's very important to have that relationship on a day-to-day basis with your child so that you know this is unusual. You know, there's an unusual amount of withdrawal, an unusual amount of silence, a real change in behavior, a change in companions, friends that they're hanging out with. A change in how much they'll come out and be with the family. And some of those signs, you know, some of them you won't find out from them. Even if you are staying in touch with their friends, a lot of times just in conversation with their friends, or if, for instance, you're in Instagram or Facebook friends with some of their friends, you get a little signal there. Something's gone wrong, they're going off the rails a little bit, or they're experimenting a little bit. And that's when, again, you have to have your hands on that wheel. You can't just pretend that it's not there. And you want to stay in touch and talk to them enough to know something's not right. And sometimes it's minor enough to deal with yourself. And as you know, there are times when it pays to talk to a professional, or talk to them even about, would you like to talk to somebody that you feel might understand you better than I do.
Yeah, that was my next question I was going to have, and you jumped onto it. When do you bring professionals in? And there's one thing I think parents should be aware of. There's a whole range of interventions you can have and talk to a pastor if you're churched, or a counselor, a therapist, perhaps the school, perhaps privately.
Right.
You can do the more intensive intervention with some sort of outpatient program if you're serious enough. And then there's the whole area of residential, and that's not necessarily hospital or residential treatment centers. It can be therapeutic boarding schools. It can be wilderness therapy. There's a whole range of interventions if the parents need it, if they see their kids getting into troubles and what they're trying to do isn't responding. And that's the area that I sort of work in when a kid gets, they start tipping over. But did you cover that in your book about how, you know, when do you bring in the professionals?
We talked about it. We didn't go into a great deal of detail. We gave a couple of references and resources, but we did talk about some red flags, and we encourage parents, you know, if you feel like you're in over your head or you just aren't sure, it's better to go ahead and find somebody to talk to. Because, you know, if someone's going to go to you, for example, Lon, and say, I know this is probably ridiculous, but you're not going to say it's ridiculous. You're going to say, if this was important enough for you to be concerned about, then, you know, it's not going to hurt to figure out what's going on. And we'd rather do that earlier than later to find out that we had ignored a behavior that now is a whole lot worse.
Yeah, what I tell parents is, a lot of parents say, well, I think they're on drugs or whatever it is. I think they're on drugs, but I don't know, and I'm worried about it. And then my response is just along with what you talked about. If it's twisting your gut, probably so. Your instincts are probably the best indicator of what's really going on, even if you can't prove it.
Right. And sometimes, I mean, as obvious as this sounds, you know, there are times when you can just sit down with them and look them in the eye and say, is something going on I need to know about? And even if they aren't honest with you, you get a chance to see. And you're going to, again, you know, your parental instincts are going to be on a little more sensitive setting and going, not sure he's being straight with me. And then, again, like you say, then you're getting some doubts. You have enough nagging at the back of your mind that you're thinking, I think it's worth checking out.
Absolutely.
I'd rather do that earlier than later.
Yeah, a lot of the parents that I work with that come in, it's been, we've been worried about it for a couple years, and and finally they come into it, and it's a full-blown problem. It's blown up. There may be in real serious problems, a real crisis, and partially because they just ignored those inner thoughts or any inner doubts that was developing over the period of time. But, you know, parents sometimes don't know what's normal. I mean, I've had some parents that would talk about residential placement for a kid for problems when they were eating their meals in their room. Well, that's not contrary to instructions. Well, that could be an indication of something, but that's not a big deal.
Right. Same with, you know, some of the learning disabilities, you know, attention deficit disorder and some of those. Is it that, or is it just kind of this normal, I don't pay attention because it's not interesting to me? It's, again, there are certain neurological, physiological disorders. There are going to be certain behavioral disorders. But before we do that, we can take down some lines of first defense and try to figure out how much of this is normal. And again, if you're not sure as a parent, then, you know, you can read books like this. You can go to a counselor. You can ask your school district. They have usually some references and some resources right there in the school district. Say, I just want to talk to somebody about whether or not this is normal.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure on the direction of the conversation, but we just had a question. Can we just, do you really find kids are so bad nowadays? Well, some of them are in trouble. Most of them are just struggling and are going to turn out fine. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, you know, I think if there's one thing we learned in working with the middle schoolers, even for this book, they really aren't bad kids. Sometimes they're misunderstood because like we talked about earlier, they're so squirrely and they're so moody, and then they tend to withdraw and not communicate. And, you know, but really deep down, these kids told us, you know, we really still want our parents. We want to be part of the family. They need us as parents all the time, but how they need us is changing, and it's not the same. But for us to just throw our hands up and say, you know, kids today, you know, go figure, just try to figure it out. They really do still need love. You know, we talk about they don't want the open hugs a lot of times anymore. But there are ways to still kind of do the fist bump or kind of, you know, bump up against them or sit there on the couch with them to watch TV and have some physical touch, you know, just arm to arm, that they secretly, they still want that. They're not growing up so far where they want to get so far away from you that they don't still need your touch, your love, your kind words, your words of affirmation. They're not bad kids. But it's a peer-oriented time of their life, and they tend to be putting a lot more stock in what their peers say and want to spend more time with their peers than they ever did before. So parents can kind of tend to panic, and again, either take their hands off too far or try to clamp down too hard.
Yeah, one of the things that I think in dealing with adolescents or dealing with the kids you're talking about, in a sense what we're talking about is an unformed personality, and I find it rather intriguing that that's also the definition of a psychosis of some sort. And in a ways they are, in a way I guess you could say the adolescent, the teenager, they are a little crazy because they're so moody and all these types of things. You can't overreact too. It's a fine line the parents have to do. They have to have an attitude. If their gut is telling them, their instincts are telling them that, hey, there's a problem here and I don't know what it is and that's a problem, as opposed to, well, they're being moody, maybe they need this hospitalization or something. That's way overreacting.
And again, going back to what you said, communication is just critical. There are a couple things on my website, CynthiaTobias.com. If you go under free resources, we give 10 tips for successfully parenting a middle schooler. And we have something right from the book, which is the no-no list, which essentially just gives you some